The English autumn was unseasonably warm, and November the 1st, 2006, the day Alexander Litvinenko began to die, was no exception. A breeze from the northwest rustled leaves turned gold on the trees of Muswell Hill, a demure suburb of Edwardian row houses in North London. The temperature was in single digits on the Celsius scale, but well above freezing. The red double-deck buses ran in their familiar, not quite predictable way. Life unfolded with the unhurried complacency of far-flung neighbourhoods, when those abandoned to humdrum routines pause between the day's panicky bookends, the school run, the supermarket, the dry cleaner, the post office, furtive affairs, perhaps, behind hastily drawn curtains. The climate, not to mention the tranquility, must have seemed incongruous to Litvinenko, a one-time secret agent turned whistleblower, an exile and defector from his native Russia and bitter enemy of its regime. Raised for many years in the northern Caucasus, he had trained for a career in the KGB to spy on his comrades, to interrogate ragged child prisoners from Chechnya, and to chase down the Russian mafia in Moscow. But Litvinenko had turned his back on all that, on everything he had been taught to do as the Soviet Union dissolved into the new Russia. Brazenly, he defied his masters in Moscow, betraying what he insisted were their innermost secrets. Now it was payback time, although, as so often in matters of deceit, the victim was the last to know. On this day in late 2006, the last, when his life might pass for normal within the somewhat abnormal émigré circles he inhabited, Litvinenko bade farewell to his elegantly coiffed wife, Marina, and his gifted 12-year-old son, Anatoly, of whom he was exceptionally proud. He headed for the city centre, the capital of his own adoptive land. Just weeks earlier, on October the 13th, Litvinenko and his family had been granted citizenship, and he boasted happily to friends that he was British. He brandished his pristine plum-coloured passport, proclaiming with an almost childish delight that it was his protector, the freshly burnished shield of this crusader against evil, this champion of the free, this tilter at windmills, some thought, this swashbuckling D'Artagnan. To mark the family's new status, his son hung their new banner, the red-on-white cross of St. George, the English emblem, from the first-floor balcony of the Litvinenko's pale brick townhouse, a mile north of the centre of Muswell Hill, at 140 Osier Crescent. In many ways, the journey from his semi-gentrified suburb to Mayfair, London's swankiest square mile, offered a metaphor for his own life, caught between dream and reality, between modest circumstance and grand vision. On this day, Litvinenko is spry of foot, nimble in his early 40s. His thoughts are in the London of five-star hotels and wealthy shopping streets, of discreet whispering offices and plump consultancies, of contact with his erstwhile peers in the KGB, with people who, like him, inhabit an opaque world between illusion and reality, between conspiracy and riches. Most days when he headed into town, Marina would drive him to the Northern Line subway station at East Finchley to catch a southbound train on the High Barnet branch, a routine commuter ride through some of the city's oldest, deepest, grimiest tunnels. On that day, though, she had made promises to friends. She had other things to do, and he did not mind making his own way. He took a bus to start his journey, then the subway, using an electronic blue plastic ticket the size of a credit card called an Oyster card. For most Londoners, the cards were a commonplace, a device for discounted travel on the public systems, linked to a central computer through terminals on buses and in subway stations. For Litvinenko, the card would offer a vital clue to the timing of a murder. To look at him with his sandy hair and boyish mouth, perched on his seat, peering indifferently at the city, luring him to his destiny, to its dark and glistening heart, you would not know that this is a man on such critical missions as Litvinenko has in mind. His cover is intact. He does not stand out from the crowd. No one in his immediate circle, not even his wife, really knows what the day is supposed to bring or what it will, in fact, yield. No one would guess at this precise moment that the fate of Alexander Litvinenko will nudge east and west toward a revival of the Cold War. On November the 1st, 2006, Alexander Litvinenko was celebrating the anniversary of his flight from Russia to Britain. He had arrived, by a circuitous route, exactly 6 years earlier, on November the 1st, 2000. He had been given political asylum in 2001 as a precursor to citizenship. But, whatever the passport proclaimed him to be, Alexander Litvinenko, aged 43 years and 11 months, never to reach 44, was still steeped in Russia, as his CV had molded him to be. Former counterintelligence officer in the Dzerzhinsky Division of the Interior Ministry Troops, former operative of the KGB, the Soviet Committee for State Security, and former lieutenant colonel in its domestic successor, the FSB, the Federal Security Service. In exile, he followed and fueled Moscow's conspiracies, writing articles on dissident websites, publishing books, giving interviews to anyone offering a platform for his tirades against the Kremlin. He fed on news from the motherland, sought information assiduously, placing calls back to Moscow, exchanging emails across what had been the Iron Curtain. He sought friendships and information from those who visited from Russia. His grasp of English was imperfect, halting, and some of the people he met in London told him he should try harder. His wife, by contrast, became fluent in the language, and his son Anatoly won academic acclaim in his English classes at an upmarket private school. But he missed no opportunity to demonize the rulers of modern Russia, Vladimir Putin in particular.